Private meeting in the back. Okay, we ready? All right. Okay, welcome. It's a really great honor to speak in front of these crowds of people. You know, there's just a couple of seats left at the back. If the people coming in late just want to grab one of those last two seats, that would be better than squishing in at the back. So as we say, we're delighted to have you all joining today. And I don't know if any of you follow the sports, but I'm from New England. I live in Boston. And I feel at the moment that following Rabbi Chanoch Tella, it's kind of like, you know, being the quarterback after Tom Brady. It's like a mission impossible here. But we'll certainly do our best. And I think that many of the speakers here today, they're very accomplished Talmidei Chachamim, some of the best storytellers that we have in the Jewish world. And I think what I really bring to the table, which I want to discuss with you all, is that I am currently on the field with teenagers in schools all across the northeast of America, and have been in and out of different schools and working closely with Jewish teenagers for over 10 years. And so as they say, I'm bashetach, I'm really in the field with the teenagers, getting to know them all, what they're into, what they're not into, what struggles they're going through, and what things work and what things don't work, and really encouraging teenagers on the right path with being as successful as they can possibly be with their own Yiddishkeit, their own Jewish journeys. And that's what we're going to discuss today. And I also appreciate that some of you have been sat listening to different talks since 10:30 this morning.
It's
9:30. Oh my goodness. For the couple of hundred of you that did that and a few others that came at 10:30. So you know, we'll open up definitely for questions and more of a discussion, so you don't have to sit for the end and just listen to me, although my British accent might be a little bit different. Hello, please, you're welcome to come in. Yep, all right. Yep, she saw that it was full and had to go. All right, so I want to begin with something which you might not have imagined would probably be the most challenging thing for teenagers today in 2017. But from what I've come across, I think that it's a current challenge, which seemingly it is huge and really needs addressing, because when you think about the environment that teenagers are in and what they really need, it's not necessarily the first one that comes to mind. Usually it's like social media, you know, and the internet, and those, which are also big things we'll get to. But number one on my list is definitely self-esteem. And today, more than ever, it seems that teenagers are struggling with self-esteem. And therefore, with the chinuch that we give to our children and the chinuch that we have at camps and schools and chadarim and everywhere, self-esteem needs to be front and center of what we're addressing to make sure that we are going to develop really healthy teenagers. Welcome. So that being the case, you know, as parents or grandparents of teenagers, how do we adapt and develop to this new situation, the new reality that self-esteem is such an issue amongst our youngsters? So I want to begin with a story which really helps to highlight one of the issues which I think really plays into the self-esteem of teens, which really draws in a very stark way a key mistake that many people make with Yiddishkeit as adults and in communities, but especially for when raising teenagers. Once upon a time, the king decided that he wanted to reward someone in his kingdom for doing something very, very great. And the king says, have we got a name here? What's the common name in Woodmere? Moshe. There we go. I know that you know one of those. He says, Moshe, I want to reward you. It's amazing what you've done for me. You're going to go to my special basement where I keep all of the royal treasure. You can go in there. You can take as much treasure as you like. There's only one catch. You can only go once. Once you leave, there's no turning back, and you can't take anything else. Moshe says, fantastic. I'm going to go to the king's basement full with the king's treasure and take as much as I like. This is absolutely terrific. Can't wait. So the day comes. Moshe arrives at the palace. They take him down to the special basement full of treasure. He looks around and he cannot believe his eyes. His eyes are popping out of his head. He sees diamonds and gold and all sorts of precious stones and jewelry and crowns and these open treasure chests all over the place. Gold coins, gold bullions, you name it, it's all there. He's looking around, he says, wow, this is amazing. And so he starts having a look. What does he want to choose? Is it the stones? Is it the gold? Is it the silver? Is it the things that look nice? And he starts to load up his pockets and wear as much of this jewelry as he can. And he's filling his pockets and he's filling his shoes and he's starting to carry as much precious jewels as he can. And he's literally filling everything. He's putting it on his head, he's putting it inside his mouth, and he's putting it inside his t-shirt like this. And he's ready to walk out. He's got as much as he can carry. And he literally can't move. He's being weighed down by the weights of all of this precious jewelry. He looks around the basement and he sees so much more precious jewelry, precious stones. And he says, you know what? Seeing as I can't get everything in my one chance, I'm going to put it all back. So, drops everything down, he unloads his ears, his mouth, his pockets, puts everything back, and he walks out with nothing. This is the message which very often we send to our teens, to our kids. Because Judaism is not about it's everything or it's nothing. Now, when you're growing up as a teenager, there's many struggles that you have, whether it's keeping Shabbos, whether it's keeping kosher, whether it's your Talmud Torah, you name it. Just because you can't keep the whole of Yiddishkeit in one go, doesn't mean you have to walk out and keep nothing. And when it comes to self-esteem, very often, a Jewish teen, a Jewish youngster, can get the impression, can get the message, that if they're not keeping all of Shabbos, or all of Kashrus, or learning in a particular level, and many other things in a particular way, they haven't made it as a Jew. And therefore, nothing's worthwhile, they walk out the door. And this, of course, is a catastrophe, and it's terrible for the self-esteem of a growing teen. Because it's not a Jewish concept at all. Just to draw the analogy to a close, every single piece of jewelry in that basement, it's incredibly precious. It's a mitzvah. Every single mitzvah should be celebrated and should be kept and should be encouraged. And the more mitzvahs you can gather together, the more that you can get under your belt, the better. And it should be celebrated and encouraged. But because you haven't reached a certain amount to say that now, or for a mechanech or a parent to give the impression that they haven't made it, they're now not considered under that camp of orthodoxy or from Jew, it is really a disaster, and it can be devastating to a kid's self-esteem. And so everything that we do when raising our teens, we need to make sure we're not giving them that impression that they haven't quite made the cut, they haven't made it, and therefore nothing's worthwhile. Every single bit of effort, every single mitzvah is a diamond, is a piece of gold, is incredibly precious, and we have to celebrate it and encourage it. And so with our messaging, we have to be very careful about what we put across, especially as the self-esteem is such a key element to the kid's development. So that, following on from that, the same really goes with discipline, because every single parent must have discipline for their teens. You can't let teenagers do what you want. And if you think that you can do that, so it's a big mistake. They will do that when they leave home. And mitzvah Hashem, everything will be wonderful at that point. You know, I once heard a great analogy. It's like a bow and arrow. It's that, you know, the closer you pull the string and the arrow towards you, the tighter you pull it. So the day when you let go, the further the arrow flies. So the kids, whilst they're living in your house, you have to hold them very, very close. Keep an eye on them. Monitor the environment, which is more what we're going to be discussing. And then when the day comes that they leave home, then they're going to fly. But if you're not pulling and watching over and making sure that we're being careful about what our kids do, so the result at the end might not be exactly as we want. But again, with the self-esteem in mind, the disciplining is important, but we have to try to work on what we call positive discipline. It's very easy to talk about what you can't do. And there's many things in Yiddishkeit that we can't do. We have many rules. starting with 613 and then going to thousands. That's just before you get to regular decency and behavior. But given in mind the self-esteem that teenagers have and are grappling with, we have to work on positive discipline, where we try and focus on the good and build up the kids as opposed to focusing on the negative. So this is an art, and there's many books that you can read about this kind of thing. And again, it's something which I also have to grapple with and struggle with. It's not the easiest thing. But again, this is the metzias that we're working with, and it's very important that we try and work on that as something that we all become experts in. So, one of the things which I personally feel like, especially knowing all the books that I've read and mechanchim that I've learned from, that I always seem to think I'm doing terribly badly with, is the ratio of good to bad. So when you're bringing up kids from toddlers to teens, it's very easy to all of the time be critiquing them, telling them they can't do this, they can't do that, how could you do this, how could you say that, why are you hanging out with him, why haven't you done him yet, etc. And all of the psychologists and all of the mechanchim say that of course you need to have more positive interactions with your kids than negative. And when we think about it, it seems like, well, we're not sure that that's the case. But not just more, the range that I've found from all the studies is that the minimum should be 4-1. 4-1, that means 4 positive interactions with your kids as opposed to 1 negative. So for every 4 that you say, I love you, give them a hug, give them some encouragement, you're doing great, what beautiful davening, whatever it might be, thank you for sharing, etc. For every 4 of those, only 1, hang on a minute, right? Only 1. And that's the lowest. It should really, some say it should be 8-1. And there's different experts that say anywhere between 4-1 and 8-1. Now, it's definitely something that I feel most of the time I'm struggling with, even the 4-1. But it's something that we need to be cognizant of and that we need to be working on. Because this, to me, is a huge, huge part, which we're going to move on from here, of creating this fun, exciting, loving environment for our teens to make sure that we help them continue to grow and chas v'shalom to move away from Yiddishkeit. So many of you may be familiar with the book Off the Derech by Farinak Margolis. It's a must-read. It's very big, but I'll shorten the whole thing for you into one sentence, which essentially is that if your kids feel more pain from Yiddishkeit, that it's difficult and it's something painful and a burden, then of course they're going to run away from it and they're going to leave their Yiddishkeit. And again, the book is great, you should read the whole thing, but that's the overarching theme of the book. And so there's 4-1 and there's 8-1, not just in your general parenting, but in your general approach of the Jewish environment that you create for your kids. We need to make sure that the overwhelming amount of Jewish experiences that our kids are getting and interactions that they have, especially at the home, which of course is the most important part of their growing experience, are positive. And so, again, we have our parenting, just general parenting and discipline, 4-1. But then with our Yiddishkeit as well, we have to make sure that those are overwhelmingly positive as well. And that is something which is difficult to achieve, especially living in a Jewish home in 2017. Let me just give you some examples. So we all know that Shabbos is magical. And one of the things which is magical about Shabbos is that no matter what time it comes in, be it 4 p.m. or 8 p.m., we're always in a rush. You know, even when it's the latest, like it comes in now, there's someone in the shower, there's someone, you know, they came home late, they miss. I don't know how it works, but it's something magical about Shabbos. It doesn't matter when it comes in, you're always late for Shabbos. And, of course, for some people in the house, be it the mums, the dads, whoever it is, have been working hard to get ready for the guests that are coming for Friday night. And they're very important guests. It's actually the rabbi and his wife coming, right? And someone important from the community. And people aren't ready for Shabbos, and the kids are not ready for shul, and there's other people making the mess. And what happens is that before Shabbos, it becomes, instead of this beautiful time of excitement, getting ready for, to bring in Shabbos together as a family, and have this incredible 25 hours together, it becomes a very stressful period. And everyone knows, before Shabbos, it's stressful. Oh, we can't play here, we can't play there, there's going to be, I'm not going to be able to have the shower when I want it. You know, it just becomes this great big stress. For a whole variety of reasons. And of course, this is something with a little bit of planning and a little bit of thought can be, we can prepare better for that. And Shabbos, which of course is so central to raising healthy kids, whether it's just before Shabbos or other things like when you have guests, and of course, you know, people talk all the time about focusing on your children and, you know, giving them the right attention versus the guests, but leave that aside for now. But in general, what we need to be thinking about is those Yiddishkeit experiences that we're handing over to our kids to make sure that they're overwhelmingly positive, and we need to get the ratios correct. So another one is one of my favorites, is Pesach. You know, we can give lots of examples, but I'm just going to give one more, and then we'll move on, because we've got a very short amount of time, and we could go into lots of these things in greater detail, but I want to try and get through, you know, lots of different topics. So Pesach is one of my favorites. You know, once I went to visit a rabbi of mine, and he was reading out this advertisement about a Pesach program, and as he's reading through, he says, "This program has got five-star glatt cuisine, all the food you can possibly want, Pesachic sushi and burgers and everything. It's got Shweki, the best music entertainment you could possibly want. It's got beautiful rooms, it's got beautiful swimming pools, it's got everything." He said, "There's just one problem." I said, "What's that?" He said, "It's not Pesach in a hotel." So I said, "Okay." And for the last 3 years, I've actually been in a hotel with my family for Pesach. And there's pros and cons about going away after Pesach. However, whether you go away for Pesach or whether you don't, I think one of the main pros about going away for Pesach, not saying that you should do it or you shouldn't do it, is the problems of the stress of the cleaning, and you can't go in this room, you can't go in that room, and everyone's got to help and check between all the pages of the books and get your kids working too hard. Because sometimes that stress and hard work related with Pesach can be a little bit too much, and then the balance of our positive attitudes towards Chagim and Yiddishkeit in general can be knocked. And so going away for Pesach sometimes, although you might say it's not the most authentic Pesach experience, you certainly, it gets rid of that issue about managing the pre-Pesach stress of the household, which we need to be extra sensitive to and careful about. So again, you all have your own examples in your own homes of what those things are and what they surround. But the main thing to remember in this regard is that the experiences that we're giving in the home are absolutely critical, and we need to make sure that they're overwhelmingly positive. And you know, when it comes to kashrus again, you know, mothers can spend, you know, and fathers can do this too, checking for bugs. We're talking about certain areas of kashrus that can be really difficult. And there are lots of parts of Yiddishkeit that's very difficult, and we shouldn't hide that, by the way. Okay, we should be proud that we have a religion and we have a beautiful Masorah that many parts require a lot of hard work, whether it's studying Torah, whether it's keeping kashrus, whatever it might be. But the messaging is absolutely key. You know, there's many people that say that the phrase, Tver Shazayin Yid, right, that was coined in this country, I think about 50, 60 years ago, when the Jews came over from Europe and couldn't keep jobs because they had to work on Shabbos. But that phrase, saying it's so difficult to be Jewish, was really the result, caused many, many people to go off the derech and not keep Shabbos and Yiddishkeit in general. And yes, it is difficult being Jewish. There are lots of things which are difficult. Let's, you know, be realistic. It's not the easiest thing, whether it's to get ready for a Pesach or whether it's to check everything for bugs. Things take work. But the messaging we put across to our kids is really critical. And we have to be managing that. And we also, number one, in what we create, but number two, in what we put across. And so what we create, that's up to you to decide how you try and manage that environment. But in what we say is that it's really important that we don't say and let our kids hear, oh, this is so difficult, this is so hard. What we want to put across to our kids is that, yes, these things require work, this is difficult, but it's worthwhile. It's difficult but worthwhile. That's the message. Just like when you study for a test, it's difficult to sit and to study, but it's worthwhile because at the end you're going to get a good grade and then you're going to move on to something else. It's difficult to make the sports team that you want to, make. It's hard work, it's a lot of practice. Yes, but it's worthwhile. Okay, and that, so the messaging, again, in the atmosphere that we create and what we put across to our kids is really important. Okay, nothing comes easy. Yeah, you're right, it is. There is work required to have a connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to have a connection with your Creator. It's difficult, it takes perseverance and dedication, but it's 100% worthwhile and we love it. Instead of, oh, yeah, you know, they just see you complaining about the hard parts of Yiddishkeit. Okay, so we have to be super careful about that. Okay. All right, we're going to jump over to social media. I need to make sure all the time. Okay. Jump over to social media. So I'm just looking around the room. So we have some different ages here, from, you know, ranging from between about 30 and 21. So this is good. And of course, when you guys grew up, to manage for your parents to manage exactly what you were doing, was relatively easy because you could go up to a friend's house and there's only certain things that could be at that friend's house. So you go to your bedroom and there's only certain things in the bedroom. But of course now, most children have got a more powerful computer than you can ever imagine inside their pocket that they take with them absolutely everywhere that they go. And of course that could include Shabbos as well, which poses all sorts of other challenges. And so social media and internet and phones creates a whole new reality for raising teenagers in 2017. And when we talk about raising teenagers in a positive Jewish environment, so we have to bear in mind that it used, their environment used to be their school, the home, or the friends' houses that they were playing in. But now, for some, their main environment could be their cell phone. The amount of time they're spending interacting with apps like Snapchat and, of course, Facebook and Twitter and all of these different things, Instagram, and the list goes on to things you haven't even heard about, that could be their main Jewish environment, could actually be their phone. And for most parents, they haven't got a clue what is going on inside that environment. And, of course, that's a huge problem, and it poses huge challenges for the parents. So, rule number one for parents, and this is really critical about the social media, is you have to make an effort to understand what's going on. The minute that your kids see that you're not interested in understanding what's going on their phones and with social media, and the minute they see that you've got no idea, they're going to take advantage of it. And it's going to drive a wedge between you and your children that, you know, you're a dinosaur, you don't know what's going on, and that's not something that you want either. And so no one's saying that you have to become an expert in how to use Snapchat, okay? I'm not myself, and I work with teenagers every day. You know, I can be in a public school, a Jewish community school, and a Jewish day school all in one day, interacting with the kids, and I don't use Snapchat myself, but I understand how it works and what it means to kids. And just before we continue with that, I just want to tie it back into the self-esteem. So the social media and the self-esteem are really linked very closely together, because half of the social media is really the kids craving the self-esteem that they're lacking, and they post stories and they post pictures and videos and all kinds of things to try and get the security and the feedback that they're really craving through all of these different channels. And part of the obsession with the social media, instead of just connecting with people, which it really was designed to be and supposed to be, it's more kids trying to make up for what they're lacking in their self-esteem, which is a whole nother talk. But for now, I want to reiterate that it's important for everyone to know, for parents, for mechanchim, grandparents, to understand, what is social media, how does it work, what are your kids using, and to be able to at least discuss it with them, so they know that you're in the parasha, that you're not some, dinosaur who's just given up on how these things work. And that's really critical. Now again, you don't need to go over the top with it and start, becoming an expert and using it yourself. You don't need to do that. But you definitely need to be able to know what your kids are up to and be able to discuss it with them and for them to know that you're up to date and you have an idea of what's going on. So that's number one. Now, okay. So the next thing is with social media and really internet, computers, all this kind of stuff in general, is that sometimes, and I hear this a lot, I'm sure, and in other places, is that people say that there's no way to create any boundaries, any limits. The kids nowadays, they walk out of the house and that's it. You've got no way to monitor what they're doing. And I think that's the wrong approach. I believe it's critical for all parents to create boundaries of some sort. Now again, people in here might have children, grandchildren in different schools, some with different rules, and that's fine, and you might be coming from slightly different levels of religious observance. But whatever level you're on or you're not on, when it comes to using something which constitutes a computer, all the way to a fully functioning smartphone with access to the entire world, and anything in between, you have an obligation to make boundaries for your kids. As I said, when you let them go, that's up to them. But when they're as teenagers living in your home, you must create boundaries. Now, sometimes they're going to break those, and there's going to have to be consequences. You're going to have to work that together with your teenager. But you have to, together with your wife and your kid, figure out what those boundaries are going to be. Again, whether that's just taking their phone away when they sleep at night, whether that's having... whether that's monitoring what they do, you having access to all of their email accounts, whether that's, again, I could go through many examples of what boundaries and things you could have in place. The main point is you must have something. You must have something. Because you're the parents, they're the teens, they're living in your house, in your home, and if just left to their own devices, then, it can be a big problem. You've got, kids just... The stresses I know of Maimonides, which is one of the main schools I work with up in Boston, of school and dual curriculum and sports, and then they go to bed and they've got their phone next to them and there's kids talking to them on all sorts of different things, or they just get addicted and want to keep seeing more pictures or what someone else is doing. It can be very unhealthy in general, not just for Yiddishkeit, having just freedom to do whatever they want. And so again, it can be something very small and it can be much more serious, but that's really up to you to work out for your own home, for your own kids, but you must have boundaries. However, here's the big no-no, which I found, and it's really been a disaster, and you have to be very careful with it. Any boundary that you have in place with your social media has to be out in the open. This is something which we do, we enforce it. Okay, sometimes you can say, okay, you broke the rule and let them off, other times you'll have to have a consequence. But it needs to be something which is out in the open as opposed to behind your kid's back. Snooping around on your kids and what they're doing is always going to end up as a disaster, because the trust that you need to have with your children should never be compromised or at all. Even if you're so worried about what friends they are, what they're doing on the computer, whatever it is, I've had parents that hack into their kids' Facebook accounts and all sorts of things. It's going to end up in a disaster. I had one mum that caught their kid, a teenage kid, who went out to a bar drinking at night, and she only knew about it and told me, you've got to do something about it, because she managed to have access to his Facebook account. Now, she might have thought she was being really clever because she had caught him doing something that she didn't want, and now she's going to be able to somehow manage the situation. But in the long run, if you lose the trust of your kids from the snooping around, getting the passwords, whatever it is that you might be doing, It's far more risky and not something that I'd recommend that anyone does. Again, if you're so worried, so you have to sit down with your kid, you tell them you're so worried and say, listen, you know, I'm going to need to have the password for your account so you can't use them, as opposed to doing it without them knowing. So something to be very careful about, to be aware of. And, you know, in general, you can see stuff without snooping around. And you should definitely always have your eyes open, but it should be in the open between you and your kids, and it's not something worth risking or undermining. Okay, we're over time already, and I've got so much more to get through. So I'm just a couple quick points because there's so much more to get through, and we're already out of time. So I'll say like this, and then just maybe time for one or two questions. You cannot underestimate the importance of a teenager's identity. Teenagers, their identity is very, very important. They need to know who they are, what they are, and where they fit in. And one of the biggest mistakes that I've seen in terms of parents trying to raise their kids is that they'll send them to a Jewish day school. It seems like we've got a Jewish day school crowd here. And the school will say one thing, whether it's to do with actually something like phones or whether it's to do with a hashgafic point. And the parents will go against the school and say, This is all good, but no, this is a load of garbage. You don't need to listen to that. This is how we do it in our house. And that can be catastrophic, the results, because when you send your kids to a school, you have to trust that school with the hashgafa and the way that school works. Kids don't see gray. They see black and white, right and wrong. That's what it is, and they need that identity. And so if you send them to a particular school and you start saying, you're in this school, but we're like this, it can be very, very dangerous, and it's something which you need to be careful of. Again, when your kids maybe get to junior, senior year, but preferable not even at all. They're very mature, like I said, maybe when they're 17, 18, you can have those kind of discussions. But until then, it's really critical that parents support and back up the school with the messaging that the school is giving over. Now, teachers make mistakes and school makes mistakes, so that's fine. Then back your child, okay, 100%. But if the school has an ethos, they have a particular ideology, messaging that they're putting across to the kids, that you need to support that. It's very important, and that all fits into the identity, which we don't have time to talk about. The final point, which we'll just squeeze in, is in your wonderful country, for some reason, you have this crazy 11.5-week summer. When I was in school, we had 5.5 weeks in England. You have 11.5 weeks. Now, 11.5 weeks is absolutely insane, and it's very difficult for parents. And so because it's very difficult for parents, so parents think, well, we'll just figure out the best way to get, our wonderful kids off our hands and keep them busy for 11.5 weeks. And sometimes what parents don't realize is that those 11.5 weeks, if done correctly, I find it really goes one of two ways and very rarely stays in the middle. If done right, it can give a spiritual boost for the entire year if you find the right camp and the right place for your child to go. And on the other hand, if you find the wrong place, so it can also affect the entire year negatively. And so 11.5 weeks is very, very long. And so it's so critical to think very carefully about where your kids are going, who they're going with, what environment they're going to be in throughout that time. Because, I found so many camps and programs that exist, especially the wonderful NTSY ones, but there's others, that kids come to, and they become so inspired, and they have such a wonderful time, and it's an informal atmosphere, environment with role models, that inspires them and changes their experience in school and the whole year. And then you have other kids that go and they're not in the right place, or a camp that's just too focused on sports or fun and not so much about Yiddishkeit, or without good role models for the kids, and that can have the reverse effect, and it's something which parents need to be super careful of and think about. But there, we're completely over time, and those are some of the main points that I wanted to get through, and thank you all so much for listening. I don't want to keep you. And Hatzlacha Rabba, parents, grandparents, and anyone working with teenagers. It's a lot of fun, it's difficult, but it's worthwhile.
Pleasure. Thank you. Just a question. You just mentioned about the idea of letting up.